This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is another episode of Phillies Today here on the Phillies HD Radio Network and as well on 94WIP.com podcast. Today on Tuesday, August 14th, 2018, Phillies return home. Had a day off to flying back Sunday night. Reset themselves after a pretty disappointing road trip, one that saw them lose both series, including the lowly Padres. The Padres, who, coming into the series, had only won two home games since June. But the Phillies, of course, coming home to host the Boston Red Sox for two games. And then a five-game series, those five games being played in four games. The doubleheader, obviously, on Thursday. That's against the Mets, so obviously they'll face both DeGrom and Syndergaard, five pitchers. You pretty much go through the whole staff, plus in addition to the call-up for the doubleheader. So Phillies very much needed to come home, not just for the sake of resetting themselves and changing environment. No, the Phillies can, it seems like they can only win when they're at home. They're an incredible 38-18 at home on the season. No team in the National League has more than 37 wins, and that's the Cubs. The Cubs, who the Phillies don't have as many built-in advantages as the Cubs do. Chicago, just because of the nature of Wrigley Field and tradition, I guess, back when they didn't have lights before 88, the Cubs just play all these day games, and I don't know. I'm not saying that that gives them a free 15 wins or so, free whatever, 20 wins. But it certainly helps their odds to win each of those day games because, I don't know, they get to plan their schedule better. They're used to it. They're in their own hometown. They're not in some hotel. Like, you know, think of if the Diamondbacks come into town and they play. This is a pretty big example because Diamondbacks have fared well there, but, you know, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, Giants, a West Coast team comes in on a Thursday night, and the two teams play a night game, which generally seems fair. And then the next day, the Cubs get to play host again at a 1 o'clock local time game, where that team's just kind of waking up from the hotel. They're jet lagged, still adjusting to the clock difference. Those things you're not quite dealing with right away on the Thursday, you're just kind of dealing with it. But anyway, the Phillies even have a better home record than the Cubs there. And it's just the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees who have better home records than the Phillies. And, you know, when you start to think about reasons why, and sometimes you look at stats and you wonder if that's a real thing, if there's a real trend to it, if it seems realistic and makes sense. For the Phillies, in that case, the way they play offensively and the way their lineup rolls, and maybe even to a degree their pitching being a little crisper there, they just fare better at home because of the way the lineup with getting people on base, waiting for the big hit, the big home run, stuff like that. It's easier to kind of play that way at home than when you're on the road. I think when you're at home, you can be a little more patient because more pressure's on the pitcher, whereas it seems like on the road, maybe they rush at bats a little bit. They don't really kind of put pitchers' feet to the fire when they get into jams. We saw that with Zach Greinke on Tuesday. Yeah, it happened again with Jacob Nix in this series. Past series on Friday. So the Phillies, when they are home, they have an on-base percentage of .320. It's actually not too impressive, but it's not bad. It's middle of the pack. Especially for a National League team, because remember, there's half the teams already, instead of having a pitcher bat, they're having an extra hitter bat. So for the Phillies to be 15th in that right middle of the pack, that's not bad. On the road, however, their on-base percentage dips to 315. 314, actually, matter of fact. That's, you know, that's a difference, but it's not too significant of one. It's a slight difference. So when you think of it in that way, they're getting on base more at home, obviously. Now, the more telling stat is you associate big hits with, you know, slugging and slugging percentage, slugging average, because usually it's, you know, a double or a Carlos Santana bases clearing triple or a home run. You know, usually, you know, obviously you can get, they had a 3-run single earlier this year. Obviously it can be done. But usually the big hit is an extra base hit. So when the Phillies are home, they're slugging 417. Again, not great, but not bad. It's middle of the pack. It's 14th. And again, that's for a National League team. That's kind of hold them to a lesser standard with the pitcher there. But for the Phillies to be 14th in all baseball and slugging at home, great. So when the bats travel on the road and they don't have their home crowd behind them, they don't have the discipline to work counts, work pitches. On the road, you kind of tend to rush at-bats more because, I don't know, maybe the different environment, the different look, the different feel. Whatever the reason is, the Phillies just aren't getting pitchers to the spot to make a mistake against them. They're slugging, as we said, when they're home, it's 417. Middle of the pack at 14. When they're on the road, it's almost like their extra base production is non-existent. It was rare Saturday to see Nick Williams tripled, Mikel Franco homered, Cesar homered. Cesar has 10 homers now, which is kind of crazy. So they have it in them there. But on the road, when they are on the road in general, Saturday aside, they're slugging 369. 369, that's terrible. That's, to give you, it's kind of funny, but to give you perspective on that, that's Freddie Galvez's career slugging. Yes, and Freddie Galvez, the same person who has killed the Phillies this season. But, you know, 369, that's 29th in all of baseball. The only team worse than them in slugging are the Tigers. The San Francisco Giants, who, just because of, the hours I work. I watch a lot of West Coast baseball, so I see a lot of Giants games. I'd say most of their home weekday games. The Giants, it is so painful to watch them get a runner on second base with a, you know, a double or even a steal or whatever. The Giants have a better slugging percentage than them at 374. So the only team worse than the Phillies and basically in the extra bases department on the road are those Detroit Tigers, those fierce Detroit Tigers. Yes, Freddie Galvez's career slugging of 369. Just wanted to look it up just for the sake of it because of how much he's killed him this year. Freddie Galvez against the Phillies, it's done now because they got all the six games in. The two teams split three each. Freddie Galvez went 10 for 22, a home run, a double, 9 RBI, pair of steals, strike out 6 times, but whatever. 455 average, and his career slugging against the Phillies nearly doubles itself from what it is in his career. He slugged 636. Freddie Galvez. A lot of bad takes out there about the Freddie trade, but, you know, Phillies probably still made the right move. I don't, 5 years from now, this will not be one of those trades we all regret and talk about how much we miss it. But enough Freddie Galvez for now. So the Phillies, The other problem is after Rhys Hoskins and maybe Carlos Santana to a lesser degree when he's not hitting, you know, below his weight and he's having. And he's having a normal season of production. They really don't have many pure hitters that just keep the lineup going naturally, especially on the road. You know, think of teams around the National League that have the ability to do that. The Braves certainly can. Marquez and Freddie Freeman are in batting title contention. Ender Inciarte is not having his finest year, but, you know, guys like him, Ozzy Albies, and you know, Ronald Acuna at the top has just been incredible. Johan Camargo. These are just—that's just a deep team. The Cubs, you know, Cubs have like, what do they have? 10, 11 position players for 8 positions. Like Ben Zobrist is not an everyday player anymore. Ian Happ's a solid guy with upside. He does. David Bodie now, only because Chris Bryant's shoulders messed up. David Bodie gets some playing time, and look what he did. He's the one that hit the grand slam off Mattson. With that, the Dodgers, you know, Matt Kemp was an all-star this year before he slumped, but Max Muncy has well over 20 home runs. Justin Turner can get on base. Yasiel Puig, not a bad option to have stashed 7th or 8th, usually 8th. Machado, we all obviously know him. Cody Bellinger's hitting like 6th. You know, even the Brewers. They can run some deep lineups. The Diamondbacks, Philly saw it firsthand. The Phillies, their rally is walk. Well, and, you know, it's not a complaint. It's just the reality of their lineup construction, their roster construction, their philosophy on hitting. It's an approach that just plays better at home than on the road. So I think it's a big area that the team needs to address when not so much address, but you got to figure out a way to just get better production on the road. Yes, and speaking of better production, it may be time that Wilson Ramos, the catcher, the two-time All-Star catcher they acquired from Tampa Bay, he may be ready to come back soon. So he's been on his rehab assignment. Working his way back from the hamstring injury. He's played in Clearwater, both his games there. He's hitting 500. And just the other day, on Sunday, he hit a pair of, or he actually hit three triples. And, you know, Wilson Ramos is a guy, you know, you look at, and for a catcher, his numbers are just spectacular. Hitting around 300, you know, last year at Tampa, and it was come back from the knee injury, still slugged 447. The year before, with the Nats, before he tore his knee, he was hitting 307, getting on base a lot. But Wilson Ramos is going to help the Phillies lengthen their lineup and really just, because, you know, after that, I don't think he'll bat eighth. I think he'll bat higher up, but next thing you know, maybe Mikel Franco's your 8 hitter, or even the Knights, Kingery plays short, or Crawford plays short, to spell Cabrera, especially because of his bad glove. Maybe the pitcher slides up to 8, and then you have J.P. Crawford running out the door at 9, getting on base for the top. It gives the Phillies a lot more possibilities and a lot more ability to just have a more steady lineup and just kind of go through and not have to worry about these coveted big innings, which are great. I love big innings, but, you know, a run here, a run there, that's good too. That flies too sometimes. So as mentioned, the Phillies welcome in the Boston Red Sox in town. Just a quick 2-game series as it was in Boston. These two teams meeting and facing off with the home and home series. Although not consecutive, is a result of interleague having natural rivalries. And there was a time when the Phillies' natural rival was Baltimore, but with Washington Nationals moving down there, and them just being so much closer in proximity. The Phillies, actually, I was going to say Phillies yielded to them, but I don't really know if they had a chance. But no, they were unpaired and now paired back up with the Boston Red Sox, where we've seen it for well over a handful of years, I would say, I guess over 10, because Nationals moved from Montreal to D.C. in 2005, and then maybe shortly thereafter, that's when they realigned the way interleague play works. During the first few years of it, you just play the division you're in. But now it's crazy. We have teams playing all kinds of teams. You know, the one given year you can catch the Braves and Oakland A's playing, or the Chicago White Sox, Arizona Diamondbacks. It's crazy. It was just different earlier when it first started. It was a lot different, you know, before the interleague play. I think it was 97 season. So the pitching matchups, just only two. It's former Cy Young winner Rick Porcello against Nick Pivetta on Tuesday night at the ballpark. Porcello having a pretty good year, more than pretty good year. Not quite his Cy Young year, but he's doing a 14-5 ERA, a little over 4. Pivetta looking to build off of his really nice start in Arizona, the 6 shutout innings. The one game that won that series, actually. And then Wednesday will be it's a series finale. And then Wednesday, I guess you can call it the series finale, but it's just the final game of two. And Vince Velasquez will get the ball for the Phillies in that one, opposite of Nate Eovaldi, recently acquired. Guys bounce around the league a little bit. Dodgers, Miami, Yankees, Tampa, and now the Red Sox. So odds are you've probably seen Nate Eovaldi and know what he has to offer, plus fastball, although straight fastball. So, if you're the Phillies, you kind of just figure be happy with winning one of these games. Red Sox are 85-35. Maybe they're not as good as that record, but they're pretty damn good. Obviously the best team in baseball by a pretty wide margin thus far. And the Phillies, if they split this series, then I think they'll lose Tuesday when on Wednesday. Then you split the season series with them. Same thing happened in Boston. Losing the first game and then winning the second. So we'll have that to look forward to. James Seltzer will be back on Wednesday to recap that series. And I'm sure, the Red Sox, they won't be boring 2-1 games. So I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about, plenty to listen to. And James will be there with that. We're going to take a break on Phillies today. And then coming up, I'm going to talk about a statistical take. We're going to take a break on Phillies today, but coming up, we're going to take a look at a take that I've kind of found to be a little bit of a myth and unfounded. I dove into the numbers, and we'll see whether the myth is busted or confirmed on the other side. Dealing with. We are back on Phillies today. Last segment for Tuesday's show. Of August 14, 2018, again, the Phillies back in town to host the Boston Red Sox for a pair of games this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, both at 7 o'clock. So I'm sure if you follow the Phillies and consume the Phillies and take in the takes and just anything Phillies, everything Phillies, not just anything, and our everything Phillies as I am, you probably have seen on Twitter the take that just won't go away, that Phillies are worse off because Carlos Santana pushed Rhys Hoskins to the left. It's hurting Rhys Hoskins' development. You know, I guess because people wanted Aaron Altair in the lineup. No, obviously they didn't want Aaron Altair in the lineup. So what do? They just make up the assumption that changing positions makes you less apt and less competent as a hitter. Obviously, it doesn't really. Well, I shouldn't say obvious because some people think it's the other way. But I will say that doesn't really seem logical. That doesn't seem to make sense. I've played baseball, but not on the major league level, and that just doesn't seem like that's not a mentality that you have when you're at the plate. You're in the on-deck circle. You're looking at the pitcher getting ready to hit. You're not thinking about what defensive position you came from. Now, if somebody moved from third base to catcher, sure, that I could buy. Understanding that maybe they're going to score less runs because they're going to steal less, and so they'll be in scoring position a little bit less. A lot of things like that make sense. But Rhys Hoskins moving from first to left field and people thinking that that has anything to do with anything, with his offensive production. Well, maybe not anything dealing with anything, but in general, they doesn't really hinder you too much. So what I went ahead and did was find a few examples of people who change positions just for the sake of helping their team win. Yeah, and these were temporary things. It's not like Jim Thome realized he couldn't play third base and he moved to first base permanently in DH. Not like that. More like, the Cardinals want to win now with Lance Berkman, but they have Pujols, and he's forced to play first, and Matt Holliday can't play anywhere other than left field. So they stick Lance Berkman in right field. What happens to Lance Berkman's numbers? They go up. Specifically, a handful of stats go up, but specifically OPS. I'll just point to that because that's the best stat to use, I think, from a cumulative stance and to get the best idea of whatever. So OPS, he wins a ring playing right field, and kind of hurts himself doing so. His body starts to break down. You probably think that if he wasn't a DH at first baseman, he would have played longer. But the point is, and that just shows it's, obviously physically demanding. So he does that playing a more physically demanding position. Chipper Jones, this is another one I just kind of thought of. The Braves, before the 2002 season, that's if you look at it, that was really just the Braves trying to get better, adding a guy that hit 40 home runs for a handful of seasons and figured he couldn't really play left, so they approached their franchise star and faced the franchise, now Hall of Famer Chipper Jones, to move to left field and vacate the spot for Vinny Castilla. And what happened there? Chipper Jones's OPS went up. So Craig Biggio, after he moved away from catching, his numbers went up. But that one seems to make sense, and it passes the brain test of does it make sense? It's not just a stat thing. It does make sense that when you're not catching, you have less duties, and so you're not as useless, for lack of a better term. And then probably the best example of all this is what happened in Florida, happened in Detroit. So both teams, the only two teams he's ever played for. Miguel Cabrera. Remember, Miguel Cabrera comes up initially in 2003. He bounces around. I think he's a natural third baseman, but he initially plays left. Then Mike Lowell breaks his hand, so he moves to third. Lowell eventually gets healthy. He moves around the outfield, playing a little right as well. third, and he hits a home run off Roger Clemens in the World Series. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of people remember him just from that. Fast forward 10 years, I guess 9 years, and the Tigers, you know, they just finished coming up short, needed an extra player. They, especially another slugger, they trade for Prince Fielder. Prince Fielder plays first after, you know, a couple of years now of Miguel Cabrera playing first. So what happens there? Miguel Cabrera decides to volunteer. He doesn't really volunteer, but he makes himself available to play third base. He only wins not just the MVP that year, but the Triple Crown. And then, of course, he wins the Triple Crown again next year, still playing third base. You know, he has since moved back to first since. And not only that, the numbers bared out. His numbers went up. They went, actually, you'd be surprised how much they went up going from first to third, or DH to third. It was pretty remarkable. So with this, I would say that because of this pattern of not really, you know, mattering, not really seemingly mattering, not only did it not matter for some of these players, it actually went up. I think Rhys Hoskins and Scott Kingery, as long as they're playing somewhere every day and getting regular at-bats, the defensive position doesn't matter. Rhys Hoskins is going to continue to produce, and Scott Kingery is going to continue to gain experience. It just doesn't matter. And speaking of lineup construction, it'll be interesting to see how the Red Sox deal with their lineup here this weekend. J.D. Martinez, who has more home runs than the Orioles have wins. If he's going to play, he's going to have to play the field. He's really a corner outfielder by trade, but really not a very good one at either. He's had some foot problems, and we're not quite sure what we're going to get out of him tomorrow, but it should be fun. So Phillies and Red Sox coming up tonight, at 7 o'clock from the ballpark. And Pivetta and Porcello, you know, if you're Pivetta, it feels weird saying it, but you got to ask them, hold them to 5 runs or less, and I guess it gives you a shot. So thanks for listening. This has been Mike Angelo and filling in for James Seltzer this week. James will be back with all new shows later this week, and maybe even as early as tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this. Thanks for listening, and go Phils.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.